what it is. Welcome to another episode of Power Talk. So welcome to season one, episode 94. Let's go. And I'm super pumped for this episode. We got a real power player in the building. But you know, before we get started, I got some requirements for you, and that's this. Requirement number one, turn off all your notifications. Turn off the noise. Make sure you're completely honed in. Requirement number two, make sure you have a pen and paper handy because we want you to go ahead and take some notes. There's a lot of value bombs in this episode, and we're talking everything finances, so you don't want to miss a thing. And requirement number three, when the episode is done and you're done taking your notes, the only requirement is this, to go ahead and take action, because we all know that action leads to execution and execution leads to results. And that's what we want for your life. We want you to get in power of who you are, in power of your relationships, in power of your brand, in power of your business, in power of your future. So with that being said, make sure you turn off all the noise, make sure you have a pen and paper handy, and make sure you go ahead and execute. I love you guys. I appreciate you guys. And I got one last question for you, and that's this. You ready? I'm ready. Let's go! Right, awesome. So how you doing? How you living? How you being? It's your girl Nani, and I'm coming to you live with another power talk with a powerful, powerful player. I'm super excited to dive into Matt Zappala's journey, not Matt Zappala's vision, and just Matt Zappala's education. If you guys aren't following him on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook, you're messing up. So I want you to take this second right now, stop everything you're doing, and go give him a follow. For those of you guys that don't know who he is, his name's Mr. Matt Zappala, aka Money Smart Guy. He's the founder of the Seven Figure Squad on YouTube. He is a veteran Marine. Thank you for your service. My mom is one as well. And most importantly, he's the co-owner of the PHP Agency, which has helped him lead to financial freedom. And has been in the financial services space for over 20 years. So we're about to get some sauce and get lost in it. How you doing?
Excellent, Nani. Great to be here. I'm honored that you hit me up. We can talk about getting some power.
I know, man. I was actually super, super, when you said yes to my power talk, and you're like, of course I want to be on the power talk. I honestly had a little freak out moment. I was like, he knows who I am. He knows what the power talk is. So that's awesome, man. And I really want to dive into everything financial education with you. And most importantly, insurance. Why? Because I'm in the verge of making a move on going into life insurance. And I think what better conversation to have than to have it with this legend right now.
There you go.
I want to kind of dive in at first to your story, your childhood. I know that you come from the Philippines. Your family migrated here in 1960, 1970. You were born in the Philippines, raised in Chicago. Not the best part, not the best areas in Illinois, but you definitely had a head on your shoulder where you didn't want to stay in the same position. You ended up going to the Marines, did over 8 years in the Marine Corps, and then you got into a divorce. We're figuring out, what am I supposed to do left? I'm a single father. I want to get my finances right, and I want to make sure I do the right thing. So I want to know, what led you to get into financial education rather than just sticking it out and staying in the military?
So it was purely by accident. I was told by the career planner that the probability of me reenlisting as a single father, part of the 15th Marine Expedition Unit, which is a special forces unit, was not good. It was a special operation capable unit, and they can send me at any moment. And I can't say I can't go. I can't fill a billet in the Marine Corps that's deployable. And I couldn't fill it with me being a single father. So I had to make some moves. I was at a Best Buy in Southern California off Lake Forest there after 405. And in that Best Buy, I think it was off of Oso Parkway, I literally ran into a United States Marine, retired master sergeant. And he asked me a few questions. He says, you like money? I'm like, yep. He says, do you like a lot of money? I said, yep. I said, do you know the rules? I'm like, rules of what? You say you like money. You say you like a lot of money. Don't you know the rules? I'm like, I got a job in the Marine Corps. He says, no, that's not learning the rules.
Yeah.
And so that's how he recruited me into the insurance industry, because he says, I'll teach you the rules. And it was 21 years ago. And I thank him. I've been through three, going on four recessions now, the one we're about to get into. And thank God he had this conversation with me about learning how to win the money.
And I love that you say that, right? That, you know, I love that you show me this opportunity because 20 years later, you're still in the game, or over 20 years, correct? Yep. So my question is, when did you learn that this insurance industry not only is a proper protection program for just you to make sure your family is straight, but when did you understand that this is going to create generational wealth? Because that's the main thing that everyone's going for, right? They're going for the riches, but they're not understanding that it's not about being rich. It's about having that generational wealth. We're knowing that your kids' kids are taken care of. And I think insurance does that.
I'll be honest. It was maybe 2 years. The reason why it was 2 years is because I was so stinking broke, I could not see past just surviving.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about legacy. I wasn't thinking about passing on wealth. I was just thinking about, how do I pay my rent? How do I get some food? How do I get these kids what they need? And so it wasn't until maybe the second, third year, somebody asked me, why are you doing the insurance business? And I'm like, oh, let me take a step back. You know what? As I look back at my last couple of years, and I really love what I do. Really? Like, why? What? And I'm like, well, and I started coming out. We're creating generational wealth. I'm helping people protect them from the worst case financial scenarios and blah, 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 blah. And I just kept going. Oh, and I started saying, oh, that's why I'm in the insurance business. Wow. Because it was a what until then. And then yeah. Why.
Wow. That's awesome. So what has been one of the main lessons that you've learned in this insurance industry that you can also take with you on leadership skills and culture skills out of the business?
Insurance is an intangible product. It's a promise, right? You ask somebody for $50, $100, $100 to put inside a policy, they don't get anything back tangibly that they can touch, right? Unlike you're buying a cell phone, I put $1,000 for a cell phone, I get a cell phone. Or I get a mortgage for $200,000, but at least I get a condo.
Yeah.
Insurance, what do you get? Like, you don't feel incensed. So I learned that, I learned the emotional side of selling first, you know? And so in sales 101, learning a tangible skill, if you can sell insurance, you can sell anything.
Mm. I like that.
You can sell an idea, you can sell a promise, you can sell a future, you can sell a vision. If you can sell insurance, your skills of being able to sell something is pretty up there.
I love that. So what would you say are some skills and characteristics that you should have if you want to go into the insurance business? And not even just insurance, if you want to become an entrepreneur. Like right now, most people, they're at a crossroads, I feel like, and they don't understand that competence breeds confidence, right? And at this point in time, everyone's like, well, what do I do? What do I do? Well, what are the characteristics to make sure that you don't panic like that and you actually execute rather than just soaking in information and not doing shit with it?
Right. So I think some of the things that if you want to get in the insurance business as an entrepreneur, number one, you have to have the capacity of being a good self-taught, self-learning, self-resourceful type person. Can't expect anybody to feed you. You got to go out there and get it. Kind of like how you've impressed me right now, the first 60 seconds of this. You've done your homework on me. Right? You've been resourceful. You did some research. It leads our conversation to a much deeper conversation. And when you are an entrepreneur, that is a definite requirement to be self-reliant on you, not expecting somebody just to feed you information. Because that's the difference between thinking like an employee versus thinking like an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Right?
An employee waits for somebody to tell them to do something. Entrepreneur says, let me get up and go. Right. And so that would be the main difference. And if you're in the insurance business, I think you have to have a sincere desire to care about your clients over commission and do what's right for the customer and do what's right for their situation. And knowing that if you keep doing the right job, the right people will come your way.
That's awesome. So my question is, I love you as a businessman and just seeing your content and the things that you demonstrate, especially your wife. I made my boyfriend sit in a little bit and listen to what your wife and your story was, just because it's so insane how so many people don't want to embrace risk or have a different attitude to what's right around the corner, right? You and your wife go to Dubai. At this point in time, you guys are broke. You just got left out of the opportunity, right? And your wife is like, we don't got shit. And you're like, what? We got it all. We're here, right? So my question is more a mindset question, right? Like, how do you get yourself as an individual that went through a divorce, single dad, worrying about his kids, worrying about what he's going to do next, and then gets himself to a stature of, okay, I'm in the finance game. I'm doing well. Now I lost it all again. Now, it's okay. I'm going to be stagnant. I'm not going to be stagnant. I'm going to figure out the next thing. What type of mindset practice or mindset discipline do you have to instill in yourself to have that momentum of, I don't care, I'm going to keep going. I don't care, I'm going to keep going.
You know, I remember a book by Bill Phillips called Body for Life.
Yeah.
And he, because I took a job at Metrex, right? I took maybe 60 days. Like, I was transitioned out of the military. Was I going to stay in California? Was going back to Chicago? So I decided to take a stab at this job, sales job, at Metrex, selling nutritional protein drinks and whatnot.
Yeah.
I remember running across this book, and he says there's three different types of visions. First vision is a past vision, and everything that happened to you good was behind you. Mm-hmm. And that's all you talk about.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, like Al Bundy and Married with Children, right?
Yeah, those people that reinforce the past in you, like, remember when?
Yeah, it's all I talk about. Because everything good about them already happened.
Yeah.
Nothing good is going to happen, but they want to recall what happened before. The second vision is people are present. Okay, I got this going on, blah, 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 blah. But it doesn't give them any energy because all they're dealing with is the right now, the right now, the right now, the right now. Sometimes the right now is depressing.
Yeah.
And so somebody can have a third vision, which is the future vision, the windshield, not the rear view mirror and not the steering wheel, but the windshield. It says, wow, I got this big windshield. I got this future vision in front of me. And that's what drives me. Because sometimes when you're too much in your present, it somewhat gets stressful and a lot of anxiety, sometimes even depressing. But if you have a future vision of where you want to go and it's based on goals, a lot of positive energy comes up out of that.
I love that. And you talk about the three C's to business, right? You talk about capital, cash flow, and contacts, right? Yes. And I think that right now, every entrepreneur listening to this, because this conversation is for an entrepreneur. I know there's an individual out there. You're going to listen to this. You may get a little bit motivated. But I'm speaking to the entrepreneur right now that feels like they're stuck. They don't know what to get to next. They don't know where to start with their business. You stated that most businesses can be successful. And you talk about this in your video, 5 Best Industries to Become a Millionaire In. Which, I'm not going to say the 5 best industries. You got to go ahead and watch the damn video. But I am going to talk about the 3 C's. Capital, cash flow, and contacts. I thought this strategy, or at least knowing this information, was so important because when I got into business, I just thought cash flow, contacts. I didn't think of the capital, right? And then I got into my second endeavor and I'm like, capital, contacts. But then I was stuck with the cash flow. How does an entrepreneur maintain having all three consistently as they're growing their business and not getting an investor in it and trying to really bootstrap it without having those struggles?
I did not increase my lifestyle for a long period of time.
That's good.
So when I make cash flow and I pay the expenses of the business, I can reinvest back into the business that capital. So if I'm feeding the machine, the machine will then grow. That endeavor will grow, which kicks out more cash flow. Don't increase my lifestyle. Be humble, right? Be hungry. Reinvest back into the machine, that capital, which increases the cash flow. So every time I kept doing that, right? Kept doing that. And by the way, every time you do this, guess what happens along the way? You run across new contacts. Because every different level creates its new friends and associations. So the downside with a lot of entrepreneurs is they try to live off the business too fast. Right? They try to glitz the glam. They want to buy the car, they buy the house. Listen, I've been doing this for 21 years. I finally now, Nani, finally bought my dream home. This is now. Well, I'm in it right now. This is my home library, home office. I just finally bought the 7,500 square foot. My backyard is a golf course, but it took me 21 years to do it. And some people said, oh, you're so lucky. You're so lucky. Yeah, you didn't see the grind I was doing for 20 years. You didn't see me save and tuck the money away. You didn't see the times where people stab me in the back and people try to put all this gossip and rumors about me, the conversation behind my back, the hurtful moments. You didn't see that. Why? Because I conserved my money. I stacked my cash. And then when the opportunity came in, boom, I was ready. It didn't matter what nobody was saying. I knew me. I did me. And by the way, that's part of the journey too as well, because usually in that process where you're innovating, you're growing, you're pissing off a lot of people because they're too lazy to improve themselves. So you just got to keep in mind that instead of innovating and growing themselves, they'd rather take that same energy and try to bring you down. Sad part about the evolution business. Nowadays, they call those trolls on social media. You just got to keep contacts, capital, cash flow flowing. So therefore, when you pick up, look up, and look back, the only time you look back is see how far you've come.
That's awesome.
And you go back and say, you go to your haters, hey, By the way, I posted this picture about this and this and that, my new house, my new car, my new Rolls Royce. How come I got no more haters? Nobody's hating on me right now. Where'd all my haters go? Because what I manifested was the truth.
Oof. That's good. That's good. And I always say, with great vision comes great opposition. There is no way you are meant to be this great and not have a lot of people hate. And not to say there is going to be a lot of people hating, but you know, there's going to be people that are silent. One of the 48 laws of power is to be closer to your enemy than your friends, because your friends are the ones that are like, damn, they just did that. Man, they got that. Man, I see what you're doing. Hey, go, keep going, big dog. What the fuck? I wish I had that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this right now, run that part back, because I love it. Now, going back to your story in Dubai, I know that you were there. You guys didn't have much. You guys were waiting for a direct deposit. You just jumped on Patrick Bet David's team. Yeah. I want to know, because I listened to probably, like I said, like 10 hours of interviews with you. There was never once said what happened as to why you went to PHP Legacy. I know that something just fell out. Did your previous agency that you were working with just dissolve, or what happened in that sense? Because I know that you guys worked really hard, set, and you just got everything taken from you.
Yeah, you know, the sad part about that is that we're building over there. We're innovating so fast. We're innovating so good. Again, back to the haters.
Yeah,
you know, there was some, we were pushing the envelope there. It was a company called WFG in Transamerica. And we're pushing the envelope so much with social media. And I remember going to doing a training on social media, how to do Facebook, how to do Instagram, how to do YouTube. And I remember maybe an hour later, one of the founders of that company, he gets up on stage and says, well, please, everybody, just get off of social media, get off of Facebook and just call people. And I'm thinking to myself, I just got punked by one of the core founders, and I'm trying to push this company to the next level, and accusations and this happened, and I'm lying, this, I'm stealing, what the heck is going on? And anyway, they terminated us, right? They terminated us. My wife was freaked out, and like, I'm like, how, why? How could you we just realized that really wasn't our business.
Yeah.
And that's, by the way, that's the reason why I have a video out there, 10 reasons why I partnered with PHP Agency. Because I realized they didn't own anything over there.
Yeah.
Under section 2B of their contract says, you don't own anything. And like, how do I argue? What's our, what do you call that? Due process. Where's our due process? You just can't take what we built for 5 years away from us just like that. Oh, yes, we can. Why? Because you don't own anything. My lawyer says, you want to go after him? You never owned anything to begin with. You're an independent contractor, but you didn't own anything. What? What? Wow. Really? Own your future, but you don't own your business though. That's what happened. By the way, there are probably people hearing this right now, but that's the truth. You want to hear where that's the truth? Did dispel all myths and misconception out there? That's the truth. And Patrick McDavid talks about when we came over here, there was a 150-page lawsuit on PHP. You want to know about that too? There it is. That's the dirt. And we're very well open about this type of stuff.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And because they try to say, what's that? Non-compete. It was a non-compete. Anyway, that went away. So all these different things, every reason why people try to take us down, and that's what I'm talking about, is because that happened. And anyway, make a long story short, that's the sad part about our industry, is very backstabbish without really people realizing the truth. And if something was really going down, why would I be here?
Yeah.
Why would I be here? The industry would have taken me down already, because there's no proof.
Yeah. Now, going to that moment in Dubai, not to say that was the only question. I was just curious, because I'm like, man, am I missing something? I was like running back in the recording. I'm like, am I missing something? So my thing is, you go to Dubai, you have that moment where you and your wife are arguing back and forth. Patrick, now you're on his team, and now you guys are feeling that confidence factor of, man, I feel like I'm in the right boat. What made you feel as though you were in that right environment, even when you were just, you guys just got let down from a big organization? What's gave you that leverage? And man, I want to keep going with this industry, and there's not everyone that's like this, you know, because I think that a lot of entrepreneurs, they are scared. They're scared of opportunities after they get screwed over, you know?
Yeah, so what
made you that comfortability level of, man, I'm willing to take my ass with nothing over there. I'm willing to dive right back into this business, and I'm ready to rebuild. How did you do that, and what was that reason behind it?
What a great question. What a great question. Probably one of the best questions I've been asking in a long time.
There you go.
How do you move forward even though you've had fresh knives and spears in your back? Great question. Question you got to ask yourself is, what's your alternative? My alternative was to start my own firm. Okay. I had to alter, but I needed to hire a chief marketing officer, a chief operation officer, commissions department, new business department, compliance department, all the different departments I had to hire. I'm not sure if I wanted to be a manager of those. Right. And quite frankly, I'm not sure if I was at a leadership capacity where I can even run that type of organization, because me, my shortfall, even me as a leader, I don't know how to be a COO. I don't need to be a CEO. I don't even know how to be a CEO. I was just a good sales leader. I was just a good sales manager.
Yeah.
To be a business person slash, that's what Patrick talks about, the four different evolutions. You're a sales leader, sales manager, business owner, then CEO. Just because you slap CEO on a Vistaprint business card doesn't mean you're CEO. Right. And so I had to learn this much, my business acumen, my maturity, and maybe even my own insecurities. I didn't know how to hire those people. I had the capital, right? I'm not sure if I didn't smartly invest that and manage it well, there goes my capital. And because I never kick any capital. So that was an alternative. Another alternative is go back to the traditional industry, which is old and archaic. The average age of the insurance agent today in this industry is a 60, 61 year old male. Right. And here I am at that time with, we have a team of 20s and 30 year olds, and me in my early 40s, we're ready to kick some tail. Right. I had some experience under my belt. So I said, you know what, if I don't do this, then what, what's my alternative? Okay. Let me give Patrick a shot. Now, and if you really want to know, Nani, I asked him PBD, we're in a French restaurant right there, right there in Dubai. And I said, you know what, PBD, I know you're formerly from Transamerica too as well. How do we not turn into our competition? What mistakes can we avoid? How do we avoid what they just did to me to make sure that never happens to anybody that we onboard and build a relationship with? And so boom, 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 boom. He gave me his business plan. I said, yep, that's a CEO. That's a boss. All right, I'm down. Let's do that. That's clear to me. Yeah. And I said, you know what? I'm learning to trust you. You're learning to trust me. So I'm going to do my part. Patrick says, so Paula, you do your part, I'm going to do my part. And what's your part, PBD? Getting this opportunity better every day. And you get better every day. You get better every day. I get better every day. Slam dunk. 5 years later, here we are, $4.5 million, close to $5 million of revenue. Later, that's a direct deposit to our bank account. I think it's worked out.
That's amazing. And I did watch an interview with Patrick, Bette, David, your wife and you, and you're making a reoccurring $100K a month from being a part of PHP, and you did that in 38 months. That's insane, right? That's the income that most people are looking to get into. Now, my question will be a leadership question. What would you say is one mistake you witness leaders make more frequently than others, especially in a culture of what you're trying to embrace right now? There is a different leverages to the insurance world. You could be at a call center. You could work for a mom and pops. You could work for a bigger name. You could work for an agency like PHP and be a part of where you're scaling, you're growing your team, and you have that environment of go, go, go. So what is the biggest mistake you would see often leaders play?
I think number one is impatience, because they want it right away.
Yeah. Right?
The frustration with their, so if you want to be a leader, you got to work on you. What's your leadership skill? How are you working on you? Like, if you expect this from other people, what about yourself? Why are you calling everybody else? Why don't you call yourself out? What areas that you need improving? Is it humility? Is it the fact that you don't know everything? Is it the fact that somebody challenged you and hurt your ego? Come on, right? If somebody called you out because you're not performing, that's the truth. They're just standing on behalf of your family, wife and kids, or your husband and kids saying, I'm committed to business, I'm committed, but you got nothing to show for it. You know why? Because you're not selling anything. You're not growing. You need to eat that humble pie. So it's impatience or lack of, and number two is lack of urgency. Mm-hmm. Right? I think the best things for me is that a fact that I was in the worst position being a single father with nobody helping me out. That was the worst position, but at the same time it was the best position, because there is no crutch. There is no fallback. I have to make this work.
Yeah.
I don't have a wife at home making in money from somewhere else. Like, if I don't sell anything, if I don't grow my business, I still get this month's bills paid. I don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
Right. And now that we're taking an invest, PHP's taking investors. We took $10 million from Oscar De La Hoya. They invested in our company. We now have a corporate responsibility of how we're managing that money. Once a month, there's board meetings. You know, once a year, we have a carrier meeting where we bring in the insurance companies we do business with, and we give them a report on our dime. We fly them in, we feed them, we put them up on our dime to show them why they need to build a deeper relationship with us at PHP.
Wow.
By the way, that's never happened in the insurance industry. You know? so when we do that, we want to hold ourselves in a higher form of accountability, which would be number three. higher form of accountability is the most annoying thing to an entrepreneur. I'm my own boss. I'm my own business. Blah, blah, blah. You're accountable to your clients.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? You're
accountable to your staff. You're accountable if you have investors. You're accountable to your investors. Just because you're your own boss doesn't mean you're not accountable.
Right? Yeah.
So I think those three things right there would be the highest hit rate of why a lot of entrepreneurs don't have the staying power. And number four would be skills. And number five is identity and belief. That's right. Awesome. And so those would be the things that I would say. I've seen a lot of good people quit too soon.
Yep.
And I see them a year later and they're not any better. And the sad part about that, Tunani, just like winning is a habit, so is quitting.
Yes. And that goes into my next question. I love this because it's just flowing. You're probably like my uncle from another family, right? So my question is, how does someone stuck in the rat race begin to think bigger, right? How does someone know that, hey, I want to take an opportunity, but I'm just too afraid? Like, how do you get that person to start thinking big? Like, for example, with what you guys do, right? Most people will say, oh, well, because I've heard of WFG, I've heard of other agency, PHP, and most people are like, oh, that's an MLM model. Oh, it's an MLM model. I don't know if this is for me, right? But they see the opportunity and they're scared. They're like, damn, I want to do it, but I don't think it's going to work. So how do you get that person to start thinking bigger rather than thinking where they're at right there?
I'll give you what Patrick did to us. Okay. Cause my wife and I were just a bunch of average and ordinary kids from nowhere with no pedigree. No, my wife's got a college degree because she got recruited to University of Pitt to play softball. And I got recruited to the Marine Corps, but really our vision of what the world can accomplish, what we were capable of, that capacity was still very small, still very narrow. And I remember one year Patrick blindfolded us in Vegas. He puts his blindfold on us. And I got a surprise for you guys. You guys are top performers, blah, 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 boom, blindfold, boom. And they see now, oh, here's room. I was like, what the heck is that? We take off the blindfolds right in front of me. 90 is a Lamborghini.
Oh my God.
What? Hey, listen. Yeah. He goes, so Paula, I hear you're a Lambo guy. I am. I said, why don't you take this for a spin tonight? We rented it for you guys. So tonight, go to the steakhouse, go wherever. Instead of taking Uber, you got a Lambo. Right. I'm like, what? Right. The second year, he surprises all the top 40 guys, take Lambos, Ferraris, Porsches, and I decided to take a Rolls Royce that year.
Yeah.
Because I want to take my guys, because in a Lambo, you can only take one person. In Rolls Royce, I got to take four or five people, and we can go cruise down a Vegas Strip. My point is, he exposed us to better life.
Proximity.
Yeah, yeah. And now in my garage, I got a Rolls Royce, right? Expose me to what I can own. So Paula, do you want to own a Honda or do you want to own a Rolls Royce? Rolls Royce. And I bought it from a former NBA player, right?
Yeah.
Sitting there. And because I learned entrepreneurship, I learned money. I learned how to buy a car through my corporation. My net payment on that based on a bonus depreciation, Section 179 depreciation write-offs. My net payment on that car is less than what people spend on coffee each month on a Rolls Royce.
That's amazing. You're big on credit too. I know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cash flow, credit, contact, or cash flow, credit, cash flow, then cash. That's my priority. Get your credit right. Get your cash flow, and then get your cash.
Oof, I love it. And what I'm going to go ahead and do, Matt, I'm going to go ahead and let one of the members from my tribe, Francesco, go ahead and ask you a question.
Oh, okay.
He's from Florida, and he's coming in the Power Talk. Go ahead.
Cool.
All right. Thanks, Nani. What's up, Matt? How you doing, brother?
Good, good. Is it Chesco? Francesco?
Yeah, let's go Chesco, man. My name is Francesco, but that's my little thing, man.
Okay.
So first and foremost, man, you just seem so disciplined. That's the first thing I get from you, man, and I admire that. When you said before, and you were talking about how you never increased your lifestyle for so long, I mean, that's got to be some of the hardest. I mean, we read about Warren Buffett having a 2014 Cadillac, and he can, you know, afford the nicest car out there. I could ask you all sorts of things, but this is the most important to me right now. I've been working with a fraternal organization for 4 years, doing life and disability and annuities. And I'm at a point now where I built a lot of relationships. I got a lot of experience. I think I know my craft well enough to jump out there and go independent. And this is something that I've been battling with because I know I'm going to have to get out there and work. You know, these leads aren't going to be as warm as they've been. So if I do this, what would be the number one thing you would say to focus 100% on if I were to go completely independent?
Have a system for everything. Okay, because the benefit of being part of a fraternal organization, you kind of got your own marketing department there. You can leverage your marketing department, their new business department, you know, even the advanced markets. But have a system for how to onboard. So you have to be a good, not only self-employed person, but you got to learn how to be a good boss when you hire staff, right? I had to learn how to be a good boss to hire my first assistants. I had to learn how to manage expectations up front. I had to show them how to make more money with me long term. I had to show them how why they want to stay with me long term. And just so you know, the people that we've hired thus far, they've been with us for years, right? And it's like we're not a, but once we hire you, right? So it's tough to get in our door, but once we hire you, we want to invest in you. We want to invest in that relation, not just a salary. And so have a system for onboarding new agents if you want to recruit and build an organization. Have an onboarding process for appointments. Have an onboarding process for a new business. So have systems. And that way, when you do hire people to run those departments, now as an independent, guess what? You hold them accountable to the system. It's not me and you. It's not confrontational, right? It's not like, yo, you dumbass. Blah, blah, blah. No, it's bro, did you follow the system? We talked about the system. We've trained you on the system. Boom, 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 boom. By the way, it's military. It's called SOP, Standard Operating Procedures. Right. And so maybe that's probably where I got it from. You know, just systems and process. And by the way, my wife is a whole lot better at this than I am. No, she's kind of a whole lot better at this than I am. And so that'd be number two, have a system for getting business. How to get your own leads. For example, our system, not because we're in a virtual world, we do webinars 3-4 days a week. Right? Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday afternoon. Online, Zoom. And by the way, we were doing a version of this before the pandemic. So when we shifted complete to offline virtual world, we're all okay, right? And a large part of this too as well, we understood anticipation. Like asking these questions, what don't I know, right? Know what you know what you don't know, and know who knows what you don't know, right? And so the other part of that too as well is how to make sure as an independent agent. See, for me, as an independent agent, it's all about now creating this infrastructure. And then long-term for me, what I decided, because I was an independent agent for 12 years before I moved into an agency building model, like a WFG or a Transamerica, or in this case, where I'm at right now with PHP. Before I shifted to that model, I was an independent guy just selling, right? And matter of fact, behind me, that shelf right there, it's all the binders I use to self-teach myself how to sell annuities, how to sell life insurance. Right. By the way, every binder on that shelf, the top shelf right there, is at least $1,000 a binder. Which leads me to my next point. You need to invest in yourself, right? Because there's one thing to be an agent. There's another thing to actually be running a business. And that's what you're doing as an independent agent, right? And so just having those processes, just depends on how big you want to grow. Do I want to be a personal producer for my entire career as an independent agent? Or do I actually want to build an agency? You know, because for me, I built an agency and I haven't sold a policy since 2010, right? So it's been 10 years since I actually seen a client one-on-one. Once my license expired, I never renewed it again. Didn't need to because I focused on recruiting and marketing and leadership development. I think for me, I didn't get commoditized by my license, right? So that's where my projection went. Long answer, but hopefully I can nail it for you, man.
No, that's cool. Thanks, man. I appreciate it, brother.
You got it.
Awesome.
Chesco. Cool. Let's go, Chesco.
Yeah, man.
Let's go. Where
do you find these people?
it's really funny. Everyone follows my movement on Facebook. I have yet to turn on ads. Everything's organic just because I really believe in building up a culture. I don't want people to find me on an ad and say, okay, who is she? I want people to know who I am even when my ad's turned off. And I'm also doing it for the people. I'm all about the people. So my next question goes into financial crisis, right? Right now, everyone's freaking out. I know you're big on talking about the unemployment rate, the stimulus check rate, and why people just, it's not a moment of really, for me personally, I can't say I feel too bad because I also feel like people should be prepared, right? I also feel like this was something coming and a lot of people that are asking for unemployment, they've had chances to create a business, to create a side hustle. And now they're being reliant on something. And I don't think that's how you're going to survive. Anyone that disagrees with me on that, it's okay. Tune into another channel. My thing that I'm going to say is financial crisis. How important is proper protection and how can someone create generational wealth without just being an agent, without just being in this industry? How can they protect themselves, and how can they, you know, prevent something like this, like not having an emergency fund in a time like this, like a pandemic?
How can you still, well, the reason why our business is exploding right now, because people that were thinking about insurance later on to push it off later on, they're getting it now, right? The what if scenario just happened right now. So what if I get COVID? I want to make sure I have coverage. Our business is booming right now.
Yeah.
But with that being said, even if you weren't inside the insurance industry, that's still one of the greatest ways to transfer wealth, the most cheapest economical tax efficient ways to transfer money from one generation to the next generation is through insurance.
Yeah.
Right? Matter of fact, I got a book here written by Bill Kay called The Investment Alternative. What are they talking about? Right? What are they talking about? They're talking about insurance. Right? And this guy's save a fortune on your estate tax and die rich and tax free. This is a book written way back in this is when books were still sold for like $8. It was written in 1997.
Yeah, I know.
1997, right? So, you know, the way you pass on generational wealth is through wills, trusts, corporations.
Yeah.
Right? Family foundations. That's the way the Rockefellers have done it, the way the Vanderbilts have done it, right? The way the Bush family, we were able to spend some time with Bush last year. Former President Bush came to our convention last August, had an amazing time with him. He loves entrepreneurship. You know, yeah. The Bush family mantra, Nani, is to say, go out and make your millions, go out and make your millions, go out and make your millions. And what happens when the Bush family gets together, they have a knowledge share, right? What'd you do here? What'd you do with oil and gas? What'd you do with this investment? What'd you do with the blah, 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 blah? And they go out to make their millions. They share knowledge, right? Started with Prescott Bush that went to Yale, right? And passed it on from generation to generation. So through those generations, the easiest way to pass on wealth is not necessarily just money. It's also knowledge.
Yeah.
So are you documenting your knowledge? Are you documenting these things? So for example, like what I got going on for my dad's 80 years old. So I'm documenting, hey dad, when you were 23 years old, how did you immigrate from the Philippines? What was the hard part about you leaving all your friends and family, everybody that you grew up with, to come to a country that you don't know anybody, and you got $50 in your pocket? What was that like? What did you do? So I'm documenting these things. Why? Because eventually my kids, my great grandkids, they say, how did the first Filipino from the Philippines come here to the United States? Boom, we got an archive. It's on our YouTube channel. I bought the website for our family, sopala.com, right?
That's awesome.
So that's one of the ways to pass on generation, recording, creating artifacts, creating a knowledge base, right? And these are some of the things that you can do to create wealth. And it's just not financial, it's also knowledge. My son, he said, Dad, I can't work. And I said, okay, kid, I bought you a master class, because sometimes your kids don't listen to you, right?
Yeah.
Even though their dad's the money smart guy, right? And so I said, okay, I bought you a master class, okay? And I said, you want to make money, kid? Yeah. I said, what I want you to do, for every master class that you watch, first five, I pay you $25. Here's what I want. I want you to watch the master class, all the courses in that master class. I want you to give me a report. These three questions I want you to answer, and then we're going to do a debrief together. You do that, it's $25, right? 6 to 10, $35. You watch 11 to 15 classes, $50.
That's awesome.
So instead of just learning from me, then we can have a dialogue, a conversation.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm building up the next generation, how to transfer and give wealth to the next generation.
I love that. And you talk about that your moment was in 1999. And that a lot of people financially compromise their future. And my question is, I feel like a lot of people even right now compromise their future. So my question to you is, why do you think that is? Why do you think people have a financial compromise with what they could be doing better?
So women spend money differently than guys. I can say this from my wife's standpoint. Her natural reaction to money, when we get money, is to save it, security, blanket, nest egg. A guy's natural disposition with money is spend it on some dumb shit. I got some George, baby. I got this. I got the Xbox. I got the newest thing. So what if you got the newest thing?
Expect
now. Yeah. I mean, there's some reports that people are using their stimulus check to buy Jordans. What the heck are you doing? Right? By the way, this, which is which is basically telling me that whole universal basic income that Andrew Yang was trying to promote, him being a Democratic presidential candidate, this is how people spend our tax money, buying dumb shit. So I don't think it's, I don't think long-term that's going to work. And then we owe this money.
Yeah. Right?
You know, for example, you know, we put our money in a pool and you struck a check. It was difficult for you to stroke that check to put in a pool and you see me blowing it on gambling. How do you feel about that?
It would piss me off.
Exactly. That's my money too.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm taxed higher because I got to fund your universal basic income. It may not make sense. And so I think the reason why people fall into that mix is because they're too much in a present vision and not enough in a future vision of what they could be. And they're not listening to the Empower Tribe. They're not listening to the podcast that stretches their vision and causes them to ask better quality questions of themselves. Because, you know, we've always defined the three things that impact your life are this. Number one, the people you surround yourself with. Number two, the books you read, if you read it at all, or the audiobooks that you listen to. Or number three, the meetings and conversation you're part of.
Yeah.
Right? The events that change your life. Those are the things that will greatly impact you. If you don't have either of those three things going on consistently in your calendar, right? It may not make sense. Matter of fact, I was doing this, you got a little bit of my whiteboard there, but on my whiteboard, I said, if you want to manage your calendar, put down what you want to do for fun, put down what you want to do for family, put down what you want to do for your finances to make money. Number four, put down how you want to establish and manifest your faith. Mm. But put that in your calendar. The first thing we put down in the calendar is what you want to do for fun. Okay, yeah. That's in the calendar. Great. Now we can get to work.
Yeah.
So that is just, for me, exercise to teach and coach other people how to manifest and make use of the greatest asset that they have that can never get more of, which is time.
I love that. And I think it's really about people being resourceful, right? People don't understand that as you are resourceful, you create resources. I think that a lot of people think that they're waiting for something to come and be, oh, I'm going to use it. That's a resource. Oh, that looks like a commodity to me. But I want people to understand as they're listening to this, there is no way in your story where you didn't go ahead and take advantage of the resources around you so you can adapt the resourceful environment. There is also, you know, points where you talk about going to Dubai broke and your wife was upset, but you weren't. And I can relate to that so much. I'm 25 years old and I'm an entrepreneur, right? I've had three businesses. This is my third business. And to build this business up, it took me a lot of moments on traveling to be on a podcast with Bradley or to go to an event so I could meet the right people and, you know, prospect people out, not having shit in my pocket, holding on to the last 10 bucks I got and just being resourceful with it, right? My thing was, I'm going to meet a big person here and they're going to tell me we're going to go to dinner and talk. I know it. Even if it's not going to happen, I know it. So my meal was, I'm going to sit with a badass person. We're going to talk business and I'm going to show them how I could leverage myself. I'm going to go over here, speak to a prospect, show them what I'm doing and why I want to build it. And it's going to happen. And I got resourceful. And a lot of times I think people get stagnant. They have a fixed mindset, right? So how do you take yourself from a fixed mindset to a mindset that's just like, I'm ready to go?
Yeah. I mean, the way I looked at my military pay scale, you know, like for example, I was a sergeant, right? E5. 8 years. Okay, that's what I'm making. When do I make more money? Get promoted or more time in service? That sucks. I'm barely making any more money. So that's fixed income. So people looking at their job, 9 to 5, no matter what you do, you might even ask for a raise. But quite frankly, they're not going to give you this massive upside that you're making, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 more a year. It's not going to happen because you're probably cutting into the increased income of your boss. And so I said, you know what? Who would I trust more? I say this, he or she that controls your income, controls your life and the decisions you make in your life. Yeah. And I said, if I'm going to trust hands, I'm going to trust my own hands. Right. And I remember getting laid off on, remember that Metrex job selling nutrition products?
Yeah.
I got let go from that job because I kept clocking in 1 minute late. So it was like, are we clocking at 7 o'clock? I'm like 7:01. I'm like, lady, get off my back. You know, listen, I was here. You saw I was here. I'm 8 years in the Marines. I didn't have to clock in anywhere. And I'm just getting used to this whole clocking in. And even then, I clocked in 7:01. It's not like I'm clocking in 7:30. Give me a break. I'm sitting. But yet, you, my point is you clocked in late. You're right. And then make a long story short, they ended up firing me because I clocked in at 7:01 because I'm like, screw you, lady.
Yeah.
Right then and there, I said, you know what? And she fired me, let me go. During the day, I sell like $10,000 of products. So they wouldn't let me collect my commission.
Oh, that's some shit. That has happened to me. That has happened to me before, but I'm like a tornado. There's no damn way you're not going to pay me for something I work real hard for. Hell no. Especially commission. Commission, that's me. There's no way you can tell me that's you. That is all me. So that leads into my last couple questions about leadership. I really want to dive into it with you because I know you're a great leader. You were in the military. You've built up this agency with Patrick Bet David. So my question is, as an organization gets larger, there can be a tendency for institution to dampen the inspiration. How do you keep this from happening?
The bigger you get, the smaller you got to become.
That is gold.
Right? So, yeah. So the same juice that got you to become a successful startup is the same juice. You got to break down that institution into continuous small groups. Right? So I got to have my small team. And for me, the best thing that has happened to me in this pandemic is my accessibility to the newest person. So what happened is my team is coast to coast. I got people East Coast, West Coast, you know, South, Memphis, Atlanta, Texas, right? I got people in Minnesota, all over the place, right? Alabama, Mississippi. And so how do I really get to meet them? I never did pre-pandemic. Until I started doing, I said, you know what? Let me get access to the guys through our private Facebook group, through our own mentoring group. And so I said, guys, no matter where you're from, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you have access to me. 9 to 10 a.m. We'll have coffee. We'll have coffee together, and we'll chop up Q&A. I don't care how basic your questions are. This is not a leadership conversation. I just want to be accessible to you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and lead you through this pandemic by being accessible. Right. And what happened is it created enough fire. People are like, listen, Matt's, you know, the number one income earner. He makes $1.5 million a year. I don't have access to a millionaire. Holy moly. I have access to a cash flow millionaire every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Yeah. Cause I just want to be there for you guys. I remember being in your shoes. I remember what it's like to be a trainee. I remember what it's like to not have a license. I remember what it's like to wonder if the insurance industry or some, you know, what people talk about me and your insurance, all that type of shit. I remember what it's like. Let me help guide you. Let me help translate some of that confidence that I built up over the years into you. Show up at 9 o'clock. And what started out with maybe 5 people ended up being 100 people Monday, Wednesday, Friday, some 70, some, but still I'm accessible.
Yeah.
So that is how and then what happens is the people bite that off of me. And I said, well, maybe I need to be accessible to my guys too, as well. You know, in the book, Lincoln on Leadership, Lincoln talked about you need to be amongst your men. You need to be amongst your men. What I learned in Marine Corps, the more I got together, my guys leading through combat, leading through my our drills, through our rehearsals in the military, in the Marine Corps, is I was amongst my men. I didn't put myself up on a perch. I was in the trenches with them, right? And so no matter how big we got, we never forget how small we need to be.
Man, I love that so much. And I'm going to take that with me. That was probably the most powerful thing I've heard all day, and I've interviewed a lot of people. So if you're listening to this right now, do me a favor and just start all the way back at the beginning of the episode and just take down all these gems, because he's just coming in hot, coming in with some really good bombs. So thank you so much for that. And just to wrap up, I know you speak about there's three types of people that are going to evolve during this time. One, the people that are just cool with it. Man, I'm cool with it. I'm eating up this check. Got food stamps now. The second person that's like, I've experienced this before. I'm an old timer. This happened. Don't worry. I'm going to be okay. And they're waiting on their stimulus check and their food stamps, right? And then there's an entrepreneur that they're going to evolve during this time. So my question to you, as this takes place, and people, business owners specifically, are trying to figure out what culture to, you know, captivate in their business, or how they want to go ahead and pitch out their brand, which is more important when you are building out an organization? Is it the mission, the core values, or is it the vision?
Woo! I think initially to get people's attention, it is the vision, right? And what keeps people on that vision is the core values and principle that vision is built upon. Mm. You know, so some of the things we talk about here, listen, we want to save America through free enterprise, right? I want to have people think, feel different about money, reach differently about money, right? Through our vision, through our mission. But what keeps people here is the fact that what do we stand for? We stand for our families, Guys, no cheating. Ladies, you'll always make sure that, I just want you to know, ladies, your husbands are safe with us. Yes, we're making $1 million a year. Yes, our guys are making lots of money. But guess what you won't find us at? You won't find us at the strip clubs. You're not going to find us shooting up anything. You won't find us pounding shots down. That's just not what we stand for. Why? Because that's just not a core value and principle we want to be involved in. You know, we want to make sure that our wives, our kids look up, say, you know what? Wow. I love what my dad does for a living. He's not coming home hungover. He's not strung out. None of these type of things. I'm not worried about adultery happening in an office when you see Wolf of Wall Street, that type of shit. I tell people, are you guys Wolf of Wall Street? Yeah, but without the hookers and the drugs, right? Yeah. But we make money. And so we're like, same thing too with ballers, with The Rock. Yeah, we're like ballers, but without all that madness.
Yeah.
But I think if you stay, remember, a visionary is a present liar until that vision comes true. And then you're a prophet.
Yeah. God, man, you're so good. I love this. I could speak to you for hours. I got so many topics to talk to you about, but I know we got to wrap it up. So my last question, no, I do have to ask you this. This isn't my last question. This is my second to last one. It's this. How do you define success? What is success for you? I always say that success for me is, it's depending on the season. It's not one definition because every year requires a different level of me. Every year requires a different season of success for me to get to that big thing that I call success. So how do you define success?
That you beat your prior best. Mm. That you've never settled for good enough. Right? And so somebody asked me, for me, it's so easy to compare yourself to the left and to the right. Somebody's social media profile, somebody does this. Listen, can you just beat you? Right? Use them maybe as a form of inspiration, but don't compete against those folks. You're competing against your next best. Because if you beat your next best over and over and over again, guess what happens? You evolve. You beat your prior best again. Guess what? You evolve again. You beat your prior, boom, boom, boom. So you're like five evolutions into the next best version of you. And if you do that without having to worry about the stress of having to compete against somebody, especially in the business world, because unlike sports, there's a finite end to it. Four quarters or two halves. In business, there's not that end finite period.
Yeah.
Right? Now we have month to month goals, quarter to quarter goals, year to year goals. Sure. But if you just think about this, if you just dedicate yourself to beating your prior best every quarter, how much different will you be at the end of the year? You beat just this quarter, I beat last quarter, that last quarter, that last quarter. Oh, I'm 180 degrees different than when I was when I started January. And by the way, that's my observation, my own mentor. To see Patrick grow and evolve, to see him grow from 4,000 subs and Valuetainment on YouTube to now over 2 million. What?
Yeah.
He's grown. He's evolved. He's become a different boss. There's even people right now that I see him interviewing, like, PBD, how did you interview that guy?
Yeah.
And why? Why do you? Because I'm just interested.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that. And my last question to you, Matt, and I really appreciate your time, is if you could have dinner with any legend, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Woo! Man, there's a lot. There's a list. I mean.
Got to pick one.
So I did have cigars with Michael Jordan a couple years ago. So that's a
check. Oh, that's sick. That is crazy. That is so sick.
And he's just as intense. You know,
so I feel like I'm like talking to Michael Jordan in a way just because you got that close. I've never talked to anyone that just sat and had cigars with him. So this is cool.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, obviously what would it be like to talk to Jesus, right?
Yeah.
The number one recruiter.
Yeah. The best recruiter of them all.
The best visionary that people today are still,
you know, still talking about, still have a movement with.
Right. Exactly. But you know, I think in terms of that, I would love to have a conversation with Muhammad Ali. Why? Because he was just so vocal, and then he followed through with it. Just so vocal. And like, I'm wondering, what does this kid from Louisville, Kentucky, from nowhere, have this type of, I would love to have a conversation with Muhammad Ali, the greatest of all time, because it transcends to so many different aspects. So I'm a big sports guy, and in boxing would be it, because it's such an individual sport, you got to put yourself out there. And the fear of getting your ass kicked in the ring and embarrassing yourself for the rest of the world to see. I think that's a lot. And he was very vocal about it. I'm the best. I'm the greatest. I'm the greatest. Kept saying it when he was nobody.
Yeah. I love that. That's confidence, baby. So I really appreciate you, Matt, so much. You guys go ahead and follow him on YouTube, the 7-Figure Squad. You're going to get so much value from it in itself. Like, I'm looking at your YouTube, hoping to get mine to that level. And also go follow him on Instagram, Money Smart Guy. And if you want to know what he's up to, that's probably the best place to find them. But am I missing anything, Matt, besides the YouTube and the Instagram?
No, I've been very impressed with how you've asked questions and how you've done your research and you got all my stuff down and you've done, I don't realize how much stuff I got out there for somebody to get the drop on me. So good job.
Well, listen, it was actually hard. It's funny because I'm really passionate about giving value to others and putting these resources. So like you said, people get to talk to a millionaire Monday, Wednesday, Friday with you and you're in the stature of a millionaire. I'm not there yet, but I'm going to the Napoleon Hill status, right? I want to be as close as proximity as power. I want to connect it and I want to get myself there. Six figures for a 25-year-old ain't that bad. So I want to keep doing this that way until I can make it to where you're at right now.
Appreciate it. 90, way to have a head on your shoulders. By the way, I was 24 years old, 25 years old when I started the business. The fact that you have social media, that you have the presence of mind to have a podcast, the fact that you have a vision to contribute, you're much further ahead than I was at 25 years old. So very proud of you.
Thank you so much. And if we can go ahead and take a picture with you, that way we can show off there with the man, the myth, the legend. So here we go.
Okay.
1, 2, 3. Awesome. And I'm really pumped to interview Patrick now. I got you first. I interview him at the end of May. So I'm pumped up for this just to get both of you guys. And hopefully one day, maybe I can get both of you guys at the same time. That would be pretty cool.
That'd be kind of crazy. That's never happened, you know?
Yeah. So, there we go. I'm calling in now. You let him know how good I did on my interview. I'm going to impress him and I'm going to shoot you guys a message together. Like, hey, let's make it happen. So
By the way, let's stay in touch because we have a national convention in August at the MGM Grand Arena. We rented out the MGM Grand Arena, August 31st to September 3rd. We have some amazing, to think that we had the late, great Kobe Bryant, President Bush, Kevin Hart, Magic Johnson, all these guys at our convention. We got some tricks up our sleeve for who the guest speakers. And if you're around and if you can make time, I'd love to be for you to be part and see the type of stuff, because I envision that for the Empower Tribe to have something just like that. I just want you to get exposure to it to stretch your vision.
No, definitely. I'm going to keep in contact with you, Matt. Thank you so much, brother. And I hope you have an amazing day. I'll make sure I message you once this episode's released.
Looking forward to it. I'll share it.
Thank you.
All right, now.